Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Hello.
Hub Arkish.
His expertise in football is second to none.
670 The Score senior football expert.
You're talking to one of the great techno boobs of all time.
Executive editor of Pro Football Weekly.
Hey, Hub, I got a pretty simple question for you. Is Leonard Fournette still an elite NFL running back?
You know, Rob, he never was.
Shaw media analyst and sideline reporter for Westwood One.
We've got Joe calling in from Elgin.
I just want to say that you are so underrated. You're fantastic. You really are. You've got a great opinion. I would listen to you all day.
Breaking down the latest on the Bears and news from around the NFL.
When will the Bears give Allen Robinson his contract extension?
It's a puzzle to me. I don't understand why it hasn't happened yet.
Hub Arkish.
I'd love to poke you. I'm not going to now.
With Dan Bernstein and Layla Rahimi on 670 The Score. The Score.
It is time for us to talk to Hub Arkish as he joins us. And usually this isn't really his time, but yesterday was so wacky that we needed to carve out a spot for him. I mentioned that he'll take calls in the next segment at 312-644-6767. But for now, Hub joins us on the Alpamonte Nissan hotline. Alpamonte Nissan on North Avenue in Melrose Park or at apnissan.com. You can also get a look on Twitch if you want to join us there, twitch.tv/Chicago670 The Score. Hub, how are you?
I am good. How are you?
I'm okay. Do you think the Bears are aware of just how bad that was yesterday? Do you think they know? Do you think they care? Do you think this overwhelmingly negative reaction across the board means anything to them?
Yeah, I think that they have to be aware because, you know, they will hear this allegation at times that, oh, I don't read or listen to anything from players and coaches and even front office folks. And we know that's not true. We know that actually they're voracious consumers of a lot of what we do, just to be aware of it. They are hearing the blowback. Not so much Ryan and Matt. I'm sure they're not focused on it, but George and Ted have to be. And I know they care. That I know for a fact. And that's what has always made this one of the most puzzling organizations in football, because they do care, they do want to get it right, and at times they just can't seem to get out of their own way.
Hub, you did such a good job yesterday in the press conference. I appreciate you clarifying why it was important to everybody who participated about knowing the contract length of Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy and why that was significant, and trying to explain to them the need for accuracy in reporting. When you asked that question, what was your takeaway from the answer? And could you reiterate one more time for everybody listening why this is something that we do care about?
Well, yeah, Layla, let me just say real quick, if I can. I think I mentioned, not in the pressers yesterday, but it's come across on the air, I'm actually the president of the Chicago chapter, the PFWA, and I was just really proud of our group yesterday. There's about 18 to 22, 25 of us. And that's not just print. It's mainly print, but it includes, of course, the TV and radio reporters. Grody's part of the group, who are in that room together every day, you know, and you work as best you can. Obviously it's competitive at times, but it's also a cooperative effort to try and get the information. And as a group, I thought everybody did really well. The point I was trying to get to, and it's a little tricky because we have no right to share people's personal information. You know, somebody calls me and says, how much is the score paying you? Yeah, I'm not going to tell them, but you know, I didn't ask what they were getting paid. It's a reality in professional sports that coaches and managers will act and work differently depending on how much time they have remaining on their contract. What kind of comfort level do they have? And particularly in a situation like this, where it's not really clear to everybody what the targets are. You know, I mean, that was the great failure yesterday, was to spell out what is considered acceptable, what is not acceptable, what do these guys have to accomplish going forward to keep their jobs, all of that. And what really is troubling about it is that they know that we have not only the length, but the details, the extra clauses, the incentives, the amount of money that every player in the league makes, you know? And so the guys that work for them are working under these considerations. How many times have we said we played well because it was a contract year? You know, and then we're trying to explain what's going on with Eddie Jackson. And I'm not saying this is what's going on with Eddie Jackson, but the you know, the fact that he got paid at the same time that his play dropped off, this is significant. And so particularly with your GM and your head coach, and a lot of people want to go to the whole, oh, you know, the Bears are cheap, the McCaskies are cheap, they just didn't want to pay him an extra year. I think that's a lot of crap. I don't think it's had anything to do with money. I think they do believe it was the right decision. But what does matter is that clearly these guys are on notice now that if you don't get back to the playoffs and probably win a playoff game or two this year, we have to, you know, look hard at firing you. And that's going to cause them to make decisions, both player acquisition and coaching wise, differently than they would if they were in the second year of a 4 or 5 year deal and they were comfortable and they could build for the future. That's why we need to know that information. And then, Layla, the hardest part to answer for you, I can't for the life of me understand why the Bears think this is a state secret. You know, why? I mean, you know, I think we're going to get to, and I think there's an important conversation about the optics that created some of the problems that came out of yesterday, and specifically around Ted Phillips.
Yep.
But Ted actually got testy about it, and two or three times. Yep. Well, I'm not going to go there. Why? You know, it's nobody's accusing anybody. We weren't criticizing anybody. It is important information to evaluate them fairly, to report on their decisions fairly and objectively. And yeah, it's not impossible to work without that information, but it hurts them. It puts them in a worse light, because now you're going to assume the worst. You're going to assume that everything they do is out of desperation.
I was bothered by something yesterday, and it's been creeping in this direction for a while. And that is how Ryan Pace, the footprint of his authority has diminished. It's eroded. And I don't know if it's just by his own doing, by his lack of availability, his lack of transparency, because when he was hired, we were reassured that was the top football voice in the organization, that the title was GM, but he was being brought in as top football guy, and reassured that Ted Phillips was uninvolved in the day-to-day operations of the football side. And I guess that it depends on how you feel about how they define day-to-day, that he isn't involved in intimately in roster transactions, etc. But when he presents himself the way he did yesterday, and when we heard Matt Nagy this year say, oh yeah, I talk to Ted every day. I'm like, well, no, why are you talking? What are you talking to Ted for every day? I have never been less certain about sort of the brackish water of football authority there. Is every time they want to reassure us that Ted Phillips isn't a football guy, then we get a performance like yesterday that casts absolute reasonable doubt as to whether or not they're telling us the truth.
Yeah, I think there's two different things going on there, Dan. The second part is what I was alluding to, and I'll explain in a moment because I couldn't agree with you more. But to me, that's separate from, I don't doubt for a minute that Ryan is still the top football guy. And George actually, I think, said that a couple times yesterday. And this is where we get into these waters of the group that want them to hire a football czar to sit in between, you know, George and Ted and Ryan and Matt, and somehow that's going to be the answer. Anthony Heron and I had an interesting conversation along with Arthur last night on our show about this. And you ask yourself, why? You know, that doesn't exist in almost any other organization in the league. Ryan is supposed to be that guy. And we were told when he was brought in that he was that guy. I do think that's the job description. And I think that George makes a very interesting distinction in that he I want to quote him as close to accurately as I can. He said yesterday, to think that either Ted or he meddle in the day-to-day football business is absurd. And I think that's true. So when we talk about these conversations, Dan, that you're referencing that bother you, again, and we had this same conversation 2 weeks ago, they can be talking about a lot of things. You know, they work in the same building. The pandemic was a particular issue this year. I'm not bothered by the fact that they're talking. I mean, that's fine. I talk to people all the time who, you know, far right extremists who couldn't be more different than me, but are still my friends, you know, and so stuff like that. It doesn't change my beliefs or my thinking. The problem with yesterday is that you tell us that it's absurd to think that Ted is involved in the football operation, but then when we're trying to find out how the decision was made, and George talks about the people he's been meeting with and advising, multiple conversations with Ted. Well, is Ted evaluating the football part of the operation or not? You cannot have it both ways, you know, and I don't think they do. I think that George is... I know he's the last word on these things. I think he is making the decisions based on input from a number of people, not just Ted. But to me, there was more difficult things and there's simple things. And the simple thing is that Ted should not have been part of that press conference yesterday. If he's the president and CEO of the team whose responsibility is overseeing the business and coordinating and administrating and managing, his presence was unnecessary. And by putting him out there and then allowing him to say a couple of things that he did, You're giving exactly the opposite message of what you want to convey.
Yeah, you're 100% correct. And that was a big question that a lot of people had was, then why is he there? And what's funny to me is Ted gave some of the most pointed and direct answers. And I'm going back over the transcript now of that press conference. And there was a question that said, are you considering contract extensions for either Matt or Ryan? George said that's mostly in Ted's hands. And then Ted said, the contracts haven't been part of our discussions. When we show improvement, contracts will take care of themselves. What are we led to believe by that if he is not the one who's in charge of this?
You know, it's funny because I think the goal is to get the responsibility. I don't want to even use the word blame because it's not about blame, but the responsibility appropriately placed where it belongs. You know, whether it's with George, whether it's with Ted, whether it's with Ryan or Matt. And I think the irony of all this is that they've actually probably done as good a job of anybody of making clear the responsibilities of George and Matt and Ryan, but they can't seem to get the Ted role straight, you know? And so if you don't want him to be the public face of disappointment and failure and possibly, you know, not being up to the job, then don't put him in that position. And you know, it's funny, guys, because here we're in the media and we're trying to report and we're the ones that people are listening to. And, oh, he's crazy. He's right. He's wrong. I actually think at the end of the day that they did the right thing. I think that based on all of the circumstances that we're looking at right now, where the league is at, what the past year involved and what the next year is going to include, that the best hope for them to compete the quickest, which to me should always be the goal, not what's going to happen in 4 or 5 years when you can never predict that, is to give these guys one more year. I don't think Matt Nagy did anything to deserve to be fired. I don't even know why there was a conversation. And while I certainly understand the conversation about Ryan, looking at the state of the league right now, the state of what this draft and free agency is going to be, the salary cap situation, the competitiveness in trying to replace him with somebody better, he has not been nearly as bad as people want to paint him. The Mitch move was as bad as we want to make it, but that's one move in 6 years. I think they made the right decision. And then they had whatever they had. If it was, you know, made on Monday, they had 2 days. If it was made 2 weeks ago, they had 2 weeks to prepare for how to present it yesterday. And they could have come away. They were going to look great. You know, a lot of people wanted somebody fired. And George came out and said that. But they could have come out of that so much better if they had just gotten the optics right and gotten the message right. Does anybody know now what Matt and Ryan need to do this year to get extensions or to keep their jobs? Did we get any clarity yesterday?
No,
what the goals
he said that that takes care of itself. The goals are collaboration. Apparently, the goal is a 6-game losing streak because that's a good thing now.
Yeah,
because if you get out of it, then you keep your job. That's what we found out.
At the end of the day, guys, my problem with what happened yesterday wasn't the football part of it. It wasn't the decisions that were made. They have a chance to be successful going forward. It was just they totally screwed up the message, and the message really I think should be the easiest part.
I want to respectfully disagree with something you said about how they have defined what Ryan and Matt do, because I think Ryan Pace took some steps to make it more difficult to understand who's or what responsibilities lie with whom. As they diffuse and talk about collaboration, he was asked directly, I think it was Mark Potash, that asked him directly about what he's learned from the Mitchell Trubisky mistake that would make him better at selecting the next quarterback. And he didn't even admit the mistake. He just acknowledged, yeah, that's I get the question, but then he didn't answer it. And then he went on this meandering, wandering response about why he knows they can make the right decision now. Is he gives us Bill Lazor and Matt Nagy and John DeFilippo, and he looks down the hallway and sees all these names, and it's just this weaselly, cowardly diffusion of responsibility. That's a simple question. Why did you get it wrong? What lesson did you learn? Why will you not make the same mistake again? And all he's doing is pulling the names of assistant coaches. I don't know what the purpose of that was, and I don't know what to think about how this next decision is going to get made.
Dan, I don't think we're really disagreeing at all. I you're right, but that's not because he doesn't have the authority or we don't know what his lines are. It's because he's such a bad communicator, you know. Oh. And this. I struggle to get my arms around who Ryan Pace is after 6 years.
He never says anything.
When you get him away from the mic or the camera and we actually get to talk to him, I really like Ryan. He's a really good guy, and he's a really easy guy to pull for, and he's a very talented guy, guys. I mean, the football conversations I've had, they're few and far between because he's not that available. But I promise you, he knows exactly what he's doing. And when you actually do the objective evaluation of every roster move he's made, he has not failed nearly as badly as people want to paint. Again, the Trubisky thing is so outsized that it weighs over everything else. But he does himself a tremendous disservice by being one of the least available, maybe the least, but not the, but certainly in the bottom five, least available GMs in the league. You know, he doesn't take questions, let alone answer them. And then you get in a situation, it felt yesterday like the challenge to Ryan Pace was to find a way to avoid answering every question he was asked. And unfortunately, that is sometimes the feeling you get when he does these public pressers. I thought it was interesting, guys, how quiet Matt Nagy was yesterday. Now, you know, there was good reason for that. We talked to Matt five times a week, every week during the season. And this was, you know, the one opportunity to see Ryan and Ted and George. But still, it was almost like Matt was smart enough to stay in the background and say, well, the less I say, the cleaner I'm going to come out of this. And that's kind of how I felt his performance was. And again, I don't even understand why his job was in question with some people. Not that he's perfect, not that he's the greatest coach in the league, but he's a young coach who's still developing. So, you know, no matter how we beat this up, I'm going to keep coming back to the same thing. I want to wait and see now how they fix the cap, what the personnel moves are, what they do in the draft and free agency, get them back on the football field. That's where we can focus on all the football stuff. Yesterday was a business meeting, and they flunked their business meeting. Their communications were just off, about as far off as they could be.
You're so right about the media doing well in that. And one of the best questions I thought was asked by J.J. Stankovic when he said, quarterback evaluation has been a problem. And you've had three chances now to get the quarterback position right. What makes you think you're going to get it right on a fourth? And it was before Potsy asked his question. And he didn't really answer that one either.
Yeah, well, again, yes, all the right questions were asked. There was a half a dozen, you know, eight or nine guys who I thought had starring moments on the media side, and it was very well done. As far as that particular answer, then, again, this is where, you know, the football evaluation and the football people that you talk to, and I'm not saying they're better or smarter, it's just football people have different jobs than media people and writers and broadcasters, will tell you that idea that he's had three cracks at the quarterback and he missed all three times isn't even fair. Mike Glennon is exactly what he said not what he said he was, but what they thought he was when they brought him here. He was brought here to be a one-year bridge to Mitch Trubisky and maybe be a solid backup. Well, you know, the bridge only lasted 4 weeks, and that was circumstances as much due to John Fox trying to save his job the year before his contract expired and going to Mitch quicker than anybody expected, and the fact that there was a four-interception game, two of which were deflected off receivers' hands. And then Mike Glennon has continued to be a backup quarterback in the NFL for 4 years. He is what they thought he was. And then the third chance that everybody's failing is Nick Foles. That's not over yet. You know, Nick Foles, he played horribly this year. It looked bad this year, but he's still Nick Foles. It was an almost impossible situation coming here with no preseason, and I think he's going to be the starting quarterback next year. Now, I'm not saying that's a good thing, but we're still, there's a lot more to be written in the Nick Foles story. So to me, it still just comes back to Mitch. It's still about beating him up for Mitch, and people throw in the other quarterback stuff because they think it helps their argument, but I just don't know how objectively fair that is.
Your turn with Hub next, 312-644-6767. He is here for you to maybe make you feel better about the Bears or maybe worse. Or I can handle that part for you. Either way, your questions for him are in the next segment of The Score.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Again, the collaboration.
You keep on using that word. I do not think it means what you think it means. It certainly doesn't mean you get a trophy. The Bears won the Collaboration Bowl, and they apparently get the Collaboration Trophy. That's what we learned yesterday. But Hub is here to make us all smarter football people, and his people are out waiting to get a hold of him. You say, well, wait a second. This isn't Wednesday. It's Thursday. Well, yeah, we sort of squeezed him in here because we want to make sure that you get your weekly chance to talk to him. And that brings out Frank in Oak Park on The Score.
Great show, guys. I'm not going to talk about McCaskey and Phillips. I'm on the record about those guys, and that presser just proved it. I got more of a
point. We know that.
Hub, there was a thought-provoking and troubling piece published online by Brad Biggs for the Tribune on January 8th. The article compared the current Bears defense with that of the 2012 team. It noted how fast that unit 8 years ago went from top tier to one of the league's weakest. Of course, that group was older than the current one, and it went from supervision under Lovie Smith, a Ph.D. in defensive philosophy, and was taken over by Mel Tucker, the equivalent of the guy instructing the GED class at night school. But as a group, are we Bear fans whistling past the graveyard when it comes to the draft capital needed to keep this defense at least above average the next 2 years? Hicks is already 31 and is increasingly injured. Trevathan will be the same age next year and is slowing. Worse, the team has tens of millions of cap space tied up in Robert Quinn's contract. Some reports indicate he might be suffering a career-threatening nerve condition in one of his feet. Hub, are there enough Bear draft picks to keep the defense strong while still dealing with needs on the O-line and possibly QB across a backdrop of a seriously reduced 2021 salary cap?
Well, Frank, without going too deep into roster comparisons of 12 and now, this defense is significantly younger than that defense was in 12. It's not a young defense. It's middle age now. But when the oldest guys you can point to are Akeem Hicks at 31 and Danny Trevathan at 31. And by the way, Danny Trevathan played some of the best football of his career the second half of the season. So I don't know that I agree that he's slowing down at all. He had a slow start, but remember the injury that he finished last year with. So, you know, if you want to get 2-3 years down the road, Frank, well, then, yeah, you could have an issue. But with where this organization is at right now, to me, it should be all about 2021. I mean, you're talking about a team that was a playoff team, a division winner in 18, backslid to 8-8, and again, could have been worse, but easily could have been 10-6 and back in the playoffs. And then this year, you know, I realized that the tougher competition, they played more poorly against. That's what happens with average football teams. But again, they were a playoff team. I think that what we heard yesterday is that 2021, we have a chance to be a serious contender. I think that's what they're saying. That's why these guys are coming back. And so I think the defense can be top five again with the talent that it has. Probably could hang on another year after that. Some of the young talent is just emerging. You know, when you look at Roquan Smith, you hope Eddie Jackson, certainly Jalen Johnson. You know, I hope they re-sign Mario Edwards Jr. Bilal Nichols, you know, showed up. And Khalil Mack certainly is just reaching middle age, you know. So I think they can be fine on defense. Are they going to be as good as they were in 18 or 85 or 12? You know, maybe not, but you don't have to be number one to be a contending team. If you've got a top five, top seven defense, it's the focus of your football team. And if you've got a top 10, top 12 defense, you can win a Super Bowl. And so I don't think that is high on the list of concerns right now.
In Crystal Lake, it's Dave. He's on the Score with Hub. You there, Dave?
Hello, Dave.
Hello?
Hey, Dave.
Hey, it's NIU Dave. What's going on?
We're talking sports on the Score.
Sorry, they must have typed me in wrong. I wasn't expecting it to come up so quick. Hub, I want to talk about your assessment of Ryan Pace. And yesterday it was said that Ryan Pace is judged by his entire body of work. And I have three things real quick here that I'd like you to comment on. There's Ryan Pace has failed to find a quarterback either in the draft or free agency that's been able to lead this team and be a difference maker for them. They've been to the playoffs twice, the last two times zero wins, and they've had back-to-back 8-8 seasons. And you can even say that they probably should have been 7-9 last year because the Vikings had nothing to play for. Ryan Pace has not improved this team one bit, Hub. And I think what they've also said, what maybe we didn't hear so clearly yesterday, was the fact that they kept mentioning collaboration. Are the Bears management maybe preparing us for the fact that both could be let go next year if this collaboration fails again to yield the winning team next year? That's my hope anyway. Thanks a lot, Hub.
Well, Dave, I think you just said your hope is that they fail again this year, you know, which would be unfortunate, I think, for all involved. And so I think we're starting from a bad place. You also just said that Ryan Pace has not improved this football team at all. In fact, he was brought here because they were the laughingstock of the NFL under Phil Emery and Mark Trestman. And then proceeded to go 14-34 the first 3 years, so didn't get it fixed quickly. But over the last 3 years, they've now gone 28-22. So he has shown dramatic improvement in the last 3 years from the first 3 years. And they are a better football team and a more competitive team than they were when he got here 6 years ago. You know, it all depends, again, on what your goals and your targets and your time frame is. I mean, was it a 3-year plan? Was it a 5-year plan? Was it an 8-year plan? You can make the case after 6 years that he hasn't done enough, but you can't say that. I don't think it's fair to say that he hasn't improved the football team. So, you know, are they put on notice that this year has to be it? I wish that George had said something that more clearly expressed that, you know, and told us, you know, what had to happen this year for people to continue to work here. But I think we can assume that that's what he believes based on what happened yesterday, even though he didn't come out and say it.
Tom in Bolingbrook, you're on Sports Radio 670 on Bernstein and Rahimi with Hub Arkish.
Morning, everybody. Hub, I was hoping you can kind of go over again your thought process in terms of not needing to bring in somebody that's more of a football mind in between, you know, management and ownership. I think it's extremely important in knowing how to evaluate, you know, their performance. And then later on, you said we came out of that not knowing what Matt and Ryan have to do to keep their jobs.
Tom, real quick before you go, I want to ask you a question. The job description that you're talking about, who's that person in New England? who's that person in Kansas City? You know, who's that person in Seattle? You know, where these are some of the most successful teams in the NFL, and none of them have that job in their organization. So, you know, and I can tell you that Robert Kraft and the Allen family, I mean, Paul Allen passed away. I'm not even sure, you know, who the number one person, I think it might be his daughter, in Kansas City, Clark Hunt, they're no more football people than George McCaskey. So I'm not saying it's a bad idea. I don't have a problem with it if they want to do it. I'm just saying that you know, people go there like that's the magic bullet or the answer, and in fact, that's not the way it works with most of the most successful organizations in football. If you are a savvy enough business person who is the top person in your organization, you need to be able to hire and fire. I've made this example a couple times. I don't know if I wrote this or I mentioned it on the air, but you know, I basically owned and ran Pro Football Weekly for 35 years. And I grew up in the football and the journalism business. I mean, nobody could say I wasn't a football or a journalism guy based on, you know, my training to get the job. But it was right around the turn of the century. I love using that expression because it's still fairly current. When the media world changed. And if you were not expert in computer hardware, software, technology, all the latest technology, you could not keep up in the media business. I am a technology idiot. I know nothing about it. But I had to hire and fire people to oversee that part of the business. And so I set certain goals as to what we had to accomplish to be competitive and to succeed, put people in those positions, and some succeeded and some failed and made the decisions when they needed to be made. That's what you're asking of George McCaskey. Or maybe that's what you're asking of Ted Phillips as the president and CEO, you know, is to set those goals and analyze whether or not they've accomplished those goals.
That's what's so frustrating about yesterday.
Yeah.
Because the goals are apparently collaboration and losing streaks.
Yeah, you took the words out of my mouth. I mean, that's, you know, obviously, you know, not losing streaks, but collaboration certainly, it was the only answer we got as to why they think this is a good idea going forward. And I wish that they would have made me their spokesman for 24 hours and let me either write or give them, you know, the pitch that I would have made yesterday, because I think it would have been a winning pitch. There's a segment of Bears Nation that is just pissed and they want people fired, and there's nothing we can do about that. But I believe that's a much smaller segment than people realize. There is a much larger segment that thinks maybe these guys should be fired, but they can be convinced by a few wins, by a playoff win or two. And so you make your case as to this is why I think with Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy, we are going to win the NFC North this year. That's what they should have done yesterday. Because you know what? At the end of the year, if they hadn't won, George wouldn't have to take the fall for it. He'd say, well, now I get to fire the guys who didn't do it. They take the fall for it and I replace them. So to me, it's about messaging and imaging. And I don't think football-wise the organization is as terrible a place as a lot of fans want to present it. Until we get that message from the people in charge, you know, you're not going to be able to convince a lot of folks that that's the case.
Hub, thank you as always. Much appreciated.
All right, guys. Thank you. Stay safe, everybody.
That is Thanks, Hub Arkish. And next up, we have the Midday Midway. I've got somebody who's stealing my bit, and somebody down in New Zealand is stealing my bit, and I won't stand for it.
Waffle Talk nearly tore the station apart. So I've got more food talk for us coming up.
We know
up
that.
Next.
Oh, great. That's the Midday Midway, straight ahead on the Score.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel
the Midday Midway with Bernstein and Rahimi. Middays 9 a.m. to noon on the Score.
Time for the Midday Midway. We spent the first hour still reeling from what we heard from the Bears yesterday, trying to make sense of it, hearing some of what Olin Krutz had to say this morning, some strong stuff from him. And we had Hub discussing his role in it yesterday and praising the job the media did and trying to continue to help us find some answers that continue to elude. All right, if you've been listening to this station for a while, you'll know that years ago, when we were lamenting the presence of Canada geese everywhere in the city and on golf courses and just pooping everywhere and wrecking everything, that somehow Barry Rosner and I came to the conclusion that we were going to start a business and that we were going to find a way within the law to round up the geese, kill them, field dress them, and sell them as food to people who need food, to imbalance some of the to balance some of the food imbalance in this city or elsewhere. We even create a food truck where we're selling roast goose or fried, deep fry, however we're going to prepare it, maybe goose jerky, whatever we had any way, goose five ways throughout the city. And that was my plan. Well, that leads us to New Zealand. And this is from 9 News New Zealand. Having Canada geese for your Christmas roast could be the solution needed to deal with the birds polluting a lake in New Zealand. The geese are depositing up to 400 kilograms of excrement into Awatea Lake on the Kapiti coast, and local residents want the geese culled and their meat used to feed the poor. So there's pictures here, and it really is, it's a scourge. I mean, and it really is everywhere. They apparently excrete up to 2 kilograms a day, and they're damaging the environment.
Whoa!
Yep.
That's a lot.
Yeah, that's what they do. And they're around here, too. I was driving yesterday. I was just next to the the river by DePaul Prep over by Clark Park. And we had to stop because there were maybe 100 that were crossing the street up from the river there. But there is a petition to do this, to have them removed. And there's a website about the information. And what they're trying to do is cull them. And then prepare them. That there are chefs that are being consulted, and they're talking about roasting it and eating the breast and finishing off by frying its skin side down, making stock from the legs and the carcass, saying they're highly valued for eating. The meat is low in fat. It is very good eating. You can put them into sausages and salami. They make very, very good casseroles. And apparently when they molt, they can't fly, and then they can be rounded up like sheep. One of the local butchers says they don't want to process anything killed by lead shot because the lead breaks the blades in the processing machines. It can also break your teeth. But This is actually, it's a real plan, apparently, now. And this goes on and on to debate talking about curries and satays and casseroles and nuggets and schnitzels and different recipes. So if they can get it done, we can too.
I do think that speaks to the culture that we have.
You know that... Every spring, I know it's spring because the Canada geese would harass me in the driveway area by the river of my former office building. And I was like, geese, I don't want your eggs. Like, I'm proud of you that you had them and everything, but like, I don't care. And they were like, nah, you do care. Get off our turf. And then they kept like staring me down. And the geese are pretty smart. They lay their eggs in one of those big posts that's in the middle of the river to help guide barges and
yeah, one of the pilings, yeah.
And I'm like, you're overestimating me, geese. I can't get to that thing. I have to fly in order to get there. I have legs. But like, seriously, they would every single day, they would just like chase after me a little bit. And there were even times where I would look at them and then they'd turn their heads and look at me. And I'm like, yeah, we're making eye contact right now. What's your problem? And that's how I know it's spring.
So you're already on their bad side.
Yeah, I am. But I admire I like how they protect their house. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you're giving geese credit, they wear funny masks, they fly really well, they're athletic, and they protect their house. And also overestimate their enemies. And usually we are guilty of underestimating our opponents. So, I don't know. I respect the geese, man. I really do.
I'd like to leave that as that comment.
Two days ago on this very station, Waffle Talk nearly tore this station apart. We won't get into that. I've appreciated everybody sending me funny waffle stories since and various other things. Somebody trolled me yesterday with the waffles from the Little Goat Diner, Stephanie Izard's project.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. D- Dude,
well, I made the steak and egg dinner.
Grits were always my favorite, by the way.
We were talking about Waffle House and steak and egg, and I sort of did my idealized version of my Waffle House order, where I did roasted potatoes with the onions, like Lyonnaise style, instead of the scattered, smothered, covered. I put them in a bowl. I sprinkled a little shredded cheddar. I set three fried eggs in there and mashed it all together, and I made two Omaha Steaks top sirloins. I covered them in A1, and I had myself a Waffle House home game.
Also, if we're asking what to do with the geese, where's Shane at? So, Kroger reported, by the way. But when we're talking about how to prepare animals, I kind of go off to Shane, too, because I feel like he's definitely an expert on that. This is a good, we have a good crew for all this. So Kroger, the grocery store chain that isn't here, but they own one of the grocery
Mariano's.
Stores here. I forget which one. Okay, yeah, Mariano's. Dot. I use my Kroger card there every now and then. They look at me funny, but it works. So they announced their top 10 trending foods from 2020 last year, which is pretty interesting given all the outages that everybody had. You remember you couldn't get flour for a long time. Eggs were flying off the shelves. But that was not the number one item. No, sir. You want to take a guess as to what it was?
Ooh, the number one item. My guess would be, based on trends, something familiar and comforting.
Top seller.
Was it Campbell's chicken noodle soup?
It was in a can, but that was not it. It was diet soda. And if you'll remember, there was a can shortage this year. So diet soda was number one. Do you want to hear the rest of the top five?
I do.
Four cheese Mexican blend shredded cheese, specifically, which I bought for a black bean casserole I made.
I flavored, go through a lot of that.
Flavored potato chips, hot and spicy, regional flavors and meal-inspired varieties, Sauvignon Blanc wine, and heavy whipping cream.
Sauvignon Blanc was the top seller? I wonder why that's fascinating to me.
I knew this would intrigue you. And we have such a great, like, this is the panel to do it, as the I'm Fat podcast is in the house on this.
Wow.
And the summary line, which I thought was pretty funny, was wine, chips, cheese, and heavy desserts. Yeah, that feels like 2020. Gentlemen, our panel, your thoughts.
I think the whole flavored chip thing has kind of jumped the shark a bit. When we're trying to, like, get meat flavors and then, like, a bunch of other crap into our chips, how about I want chips that taste like chips?
Yeah, I'm a purist, too. I'm absolutely a regular chips person in that regard. And I will say, the Kroger house brand is good. And, like, half the price. The actual regular wavy Kroger chips are just fine. A lot of their house brands, or most house brands, are fine. I would default to that anyway. Like, when... just speaking from personal use, the only time I buy heavy whipping cream is when I'm using it in a pasta sauce. There's one sauce that I make that's a sort of a crowd pleaser here that is prosciutto, shallot, cremini mushroom cream, and I finish it with wilted spinach, and it's really good, and that's the only time I have cream in the house.
And members of wilted spinach.
And members of cream.
There was a time where I accidentally ordered heavy cream in my Starbucks, and couldn't figure out why my coffee was chunky, but I kept doing it because it said cream. I did it, like, from the app, and then I'm like, oh, they must have screwed it up. So the next day, I just auto reordered the same thing. And for about a week, I was ordering iced coffee with heavy cream instead of cream. That was a bad mistake, and my stomach did not like it.
Twitstream wants the rest.
That's a valid criticism.
I love that Gallagher Way Starbucks. I love that thing. That's so funny. I'm sorry about your accident. I will say that heavy whipping cream is in my refrigerator right now because it lasts forever. I did not buy it last year. And I use it for all those stupid viral TikTok coffee drinks that everybody started posting. And I was like, yeah, I'm a 13-year-old. I'll get in on this. And so I started learning how to make my own cold foam, cold brew, and various other... Like, I did a matcha dalgona, which is like where you put the coffee portion or the caffeinated portion on top of the milk over ice.
Wow.
So, yeah, I'm a big fan of that. Also, yeah, I, I catch every like 18,000th comment on Twitch because you guys are a show within a show, which I think is cool. But a Twitch person wants the recipe, and that gives me an idea because I've talked about Bernstein Rahimi Movie Club. We might need to do Bernstein Rahimi Recipe Club featuring the I'm Fat podcast as part of the mix.
Are they talking for the pasta sauce?
Yeah.
Oh, that's super easy. Like I don't use a recipe. You get a bunch of shallots and you chop them up. I get my big frying pan out. I put a little bit of olive oil on the bottom. You throw in the shallot. You sweat that out. Don't burn it. Don't crisp it. Just sweat it out over like medium heat.
But when you say a little bit of olive oil, are you talking 2 tablespoons, 1 tablespoon?
Yeah, like whatever. A glug with olive oil.
One glug, get it, 2 glug?
A glug. You're not going to get it wrong. And then after the shallot sweats out a little bit, you take chunks, ideally chunks of prosciutto. So if you get it, have them get it like a quarter pound of prosciutto in like one thick slab. Or Mariano's has it already pre-done, pre-chunked over by the cheese section, and it's $4.99 for like 5 ounces. You throw that in, you flop it around a little bit, you put in some black pepper, maybe a tiny bit of salt, and then you put as many mushrooms as you want, sliced cremini mushrooms. You can use portobellos, you can use regular mushrooms. Sweat those out. They're going to soak up some of the olive oil. They give it back later, but get those all nice and happy. And then you pour in a half a pint of cream. That'll reduce a little bit. And the next thing, when your pasta's al dente or just under al dente, you throw in your pasta, you throw it around in the cream prosciutto mushroom shallot mixture. Then you get one
reserve pasta water at all?
I don't usually because it's usually plenty, but you can. You get one bag of baby spinach and turn the heat off. Dump the baby spinach in, stir it around, and by the time you bring the whole bowl over to the table to serve, it'll be wilted, and you get your moisture as it comes out of the spinach, which is why I don't need the pasta water, because otherwise, by the time the spinach wilts, and then you serve, and then you with a little bit of Parmesan and Romano cheese. That's it. So easy. So easy.
Yeah, I can't cook, frozen and I can throw it in an air fryer, I'm down.
Yeah, I'm saying. Like, Instant Pot, Crock Pot, Dan's like, oh, you just do 15 steps and then you're good.
It's so easy. And if you want to put in a tiny bit of hot chili flake, that's good too.
My hack to simplify things is to take a French bread pizza, cut it in half, and then it'll fit in a smaller air fryer if you have one of those.
I'm here for that hack. I'm 100% here for that hack. Wait, if you cut them in little circles, do they become like retro bagel bites, even though they're not bagel?
That's a lot of work. And then you're wasting some of the, you know, because if you're taking a square and you're making it a circle, you're wasting the edge there. So I don't condone that, but yes.
I think you're burning too many calories if you're doing that, certainly for the I'm Fat Pod. That is the Midday Midway. We do it most or some days around 10:40 or so. And next up, Kevin Fishbane is going to join us. He was part of that crew yesterday asking questions of the four bears. And we'll find out with a full day removed from it, 24 hours removed from it right now, what his thoughts are on what that was and where the team is. So another Bears expert joins Bernstein and Rahimi next on The Score.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.